Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I am your host, Omar Cumberbatch. Today, we have one of our really, really great shows on hand because I have an amazing guest, and everybody knows that on the Wellness Ultimatum, even though this is a health and wellness show, we really have, like, the highest-rated shows when it comes to dating and love, sex, and relationships, and I have an awesome guest today. Her name is Pauline Middleton, and she has been a modern love coach, because this is definitely a modern approach to relationships, since 2010. She has an economics background originally and has worked extensively around the world, having lived in Paris, Algeria, Hong Kong, and has visited many states in the U.S. She's worked for several companies in sales and marketing until she decided to become a coach. And she became a coach because she had a deeply disappointed love life. And she came up with an amazing strategy, and it's going to be quite controversial. And I just really want to get her to explain it, because it was a fascinating read, and I think that the audience is going to get a lot out of this. Pauline, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Well, thank you very much, Omar, and I'm just fine.
great. And now, where are you today? Actually, you're not in the United States, correct?
No, that's right. I'm in the middle of Copenhagen, and I just attended the Copenhagen Pride Festival.
Oh, okay, great to hear. Mm-hmm. So, I just want to jump into it. Give us a little bit about your new book, The One Woman, Three Men. This was just a really, really good read, and like I said to you off the air, I just finished it up this morning, and I know that we're going to have a lot of different talking points. So can you get into it, like how you wrote this book, how you came up with this concept, and just tell a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, you know, I was married and had a daughter, and then for different reasons we divorced. And then I nine months later, I met another guy, and I was with him for a year, and then I found out that he was cheating on me. And then I was like, you know, really devastated about love and thinking that, okay, things are not working out the way I think they should. And then when I looked around, I saw that a number of other people were actually also struggling with love. So I figured we need to rethink this, at least for a while. And then I invented this one woman, three men model, just in order to you know, try something else. And then since then, I've found that it can really empower women, especially women. It can also help men, but it is mostly a model that women can use to find out what's important for them in love and stick to it and be constructive and positive about it towards a partner.
Absolutely. And now, tell us how, like, you came up with the exact process, because I thought that was fascinating that you came up with a list of 26 aspects of your mate, and then you did a little division.
Right.
Yeah, please tell us that. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, well, you know, I sat down and figured, okay, when this love thing doesn't really work in my life, what is wrong? You know, what do I really need a man? Like, what good is a man to me? And then I started making this list. And I thought there would be maybe 3 or 4 points on the list. And then I could figure, okay, can I live without this or do I really need it? But before I knew it, there were 26 points on the list. And I mean, 26 points, that's quite a lot of areas. And you've read the book, so you've seen the 26 areas. And you know,
yes.
It's just, it's a different, within a lot of different different areas that I appreciated sharing with a man. But then I also know that once you start dating, you know, you cannot really put up a list of 26 points. I mean, I would never respond to a profile like that myself.
right.
Yeah. So what I did was that I looked at the list again, and then I tried to figure out what are the three most important areas for me on this list. And then I rearranged them and looked at them again and left the list for a couple of days and looked at it again. And then I found out that it was really important for me to find a man that I could talk with. You know, I like to talk about life and love and politics and whatnot. And I also wanted a guy that could help me with practical stuff, because I'm a very good assistant, but I cannot really plan a practical project myself. And then I wanted a guy for whom love is important. And the last area was quite a thing I spent some weeks or some days defining. Because, you know, what is a good love life to you? Most people think
mm-hmm.
that we all feel the same way, but actually we don't. So I set myself the challenge to actually define what is a good life, love life to me. And then I found out that it was a guy who wanted to make love 3 to 4 times a week in a varied manner. And
mm-hmm.
Then I decided to make a dating profile looking for 3 men. A guy to talk to, a handyman, and a lover.
And now, what was the biggest, like, I want to say elephant in the room in that kind of profile? Because, like, how did someone just sign up for one of the roles instead of the other?
Well, you know, most of the men, they decided to sign up for all 3, saying, hey, you're a lucky woman, I'm a 3-in-1. So
mm-hmm.
I had to kind of insist that, no, this is not what I want. I want us to be able to, you know, meet each other within one of these roles and then try to find out where does it actually go wrong. Because that was maybe what I had found in the other relationships I've had, that, you know, things had kept going wrong, but I couldn't quite identify where and how and, you know, what had actually happened. So I wanted to separate things, a little like a researcher does in a, you know, a social experiment or whatever, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
and then some of the men said, you know, I don't want to choose one of the roles. I think you're a crazy woman, or I don't think it's interesting, and so on. But that was just a minority. Most of them said either immediately what role they opted for, or they said, I need to think about that. So, and
now,
then they signed up for one role.
Now, do you think that they signed up for the role to get to the one role that I think that was the overarching theme of them most men, was to get to the sexual role?
Well, in the beginning, I didn't think so. But after, you know, already a couple of weeks or maybe a month, I knew that that was the case. Because the guy
mm-hmm.
who signed up for the practical stuff, you know, we met and he helped me with this and that and whatnot, and it was fine. And then he said, you know, after 2 or 3 meetings, he would look at me and say, okay, is this going to lead to sex as well? And then I would
mm-hmm.
look at him and I would kind of feel, do I feel like having sex with this guy? And that was a great position to put myself in. Because early on,
mm-hmm.
I would feel more or less obliged to actually have sex with him as well. But now, since
mm-hmm.
we had agreed that this was, you know, he took on the role of the handyman, so I didn't feel I had to also have sex with him. So I could decide, yes, I want to, or no, thank you. I'm not in that mood, or we're not that kind of people for each other. So that
yeah,
was
no, that,
really a great step.
Yeah, so it's definitely a part of this is definitely the empowerment part where you can just, you know, you really choose where you want to be while getting all of your needs met.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
and you know, it wasn't something that other people allowed me to do. It was something that I allowed myself to do. I said, okay, we have these 3 roles. You signed up for this role, so this is all that I owe you. And
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, it did develop in other directions with the number of the men, and that was fine as well because I had the time to kind of think and feel and get a sense of him, you know, because
mm-hmm.
that was another advantage of the model was that the men had to kind of step out of their comfort zone in order to pick one role. You know,
mm-hmm.
they couldn't just kind of say, oh, well, you know, I'm a really charming guy and I'm in for all 4 or all 3 roles. You know, they had to kind of pick a role. And then I would
mm-hmm.
ask them, why did you pick that role? And already there, you know, an interesting talk starts.
No, I think it was fascinating, especially, you know, listen, I'm American, and one of the people that I really, I giggled when I read David from Belgium's passage, and he, you know, it's like, we do a lot of outsourcing. So,
mm-hmm.
like, when I'm thinking of the handyman, a guy could, like, have somebody just pay to fix something. Why was it important
mm-hmm.
for you to say, no, I want you to fix it specifically?
Well, it was because when I had been in a relationship, one of the conflict issues was practical stuff around the house. And when I talked to my girlfriends, they also said, yeah, you know, I need to ask my husband 5 times before he mows the lawn or before he fixes this and that. So I knew that it was an area where you had to be quite concrete in order to say, what are my expectations? What do you want to give? You know, be clear in the communication. And I know it's not something that we really consider to be part of a romantic relationship, but it certainly is, you know. The everyday life of a couple consists of many practical tasks. So I knew I had to make that one part of my plan to find a boyfriend.
No, I got you. Because I was just thinking, because again, I wanted to flip it and see if this model works for men, because you do say that it works for men to a point. Because I'm just saying, say, for instance, that you're in a relationship with a woman who doesn't necessarily cook up to your standards, for instance. Like, this, what's wrong with going out and getting that excellent meal that you have maybe once or twice a week, as opposed to someone who's going to be a gourmet chef for you all the time?
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, it's what is most of the time wrong is that couples don't have the tools to talk with each other about it in a constructive manner. You know, it will lead to conflict, it will lead to unsatisfied needs, and it will lead to frustrations. And therefore, you know, I've had married couples who come up to me and say, oh, this book really helps us in our couple to talk about our different expectations and dreams and so on. And I'm really happy when that happens as well, you know. So it's not only for single people, it's also for married couples who, like, feel that, oh, is this all that life has for me? I think we could do something more or something better or something higher or, you know, meet each other on different levels. And people can use the book for that as well.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that part. Now, do you feel like you're on, like, the forefront of a change? Because you do touch on a lot of different topics, including the influence of, like, the romantic ideals of Hollywood and the expectations of women and men as well. Like, you do mention in your book regarding, like, we live in an era that even 15 years ago, things weren't as accepted as they were now. How do you think you're on the forefront of that?
In a way, I think so, because I can feel that, you know, when I coach people and then when I meet people, you know, regarding the book, we are all very much influenced by our parents' generation norms within love. So we may want to change things, but it's not as easy as we would like it to be to change, because the norms and the socially accepted actions and so on, that's kind of sticks deep inside people. So in that sense, by just urging women to have 3 men instead of one, you know, some women, they like lose their breath when I propose it, and some men are like, hey, what is happening? Can I then also have 3 women? And then I tell men, well, a lot of men have had more than one woman for centuries. You know, so in a sense, it's also for women to allow themselves to go look for what they really long for instead of just accepting what has landed on their plate.
Now, do you think that this model is again, just for clarification, is this something that can be done long term? Like when I say clarification, is this something kind of just to justify, like, what they actually want out of relationships? Or, like, can someone do this for, like, their entire life?
Well, for most people that I've coached, and also for me, it served as a catalyst. So in that sense, you know, it's something that you do for a while, and then you find out what is really important for you and what you want to stick with. Because some people are like, you know, too willing to compromise and not actually aware of how much the compromise costs for them. But when you get to be more conscious about it, it's like, oh, okay, well, maybe I just shouldn't. No, that's right. You shouldn't compromise on the key areas in your life. The 2 to 3 key areas in your life, they just shouldn't be full of compromise, because it will make you feel like you are constantly compromising. So, I mean, of course, relationship is about compromising, but not on the 2 to 3 areas that are most important for you.
So, like, how is that different from, like, just generally dating? Because I know a lot of women who actually struggle with this, too, where they'll, like, just get into a situation with one man and just kind of, it doesn't work, but they try to make it work. And it's,
yeah.
Like, and I always recommend, why don't you just date multiple people so that you understand what you want? Like, how is your model, like, different from, like, the average dating besides just putting these people into these roles?
Well, the average dating will have a tendency to fill you with romantic dreams. So that, you know, when you go dating, it will be like, oh, is this my soulmate? Is this really the guy for me? Is this going to be wonderful? And if only I kind of stick with this and accept this and that and whatnot, then things will work out. But I've seen that actually many times when women say, oh, well, you know, I think you're really good at this and that, so that's what you and I are going to do together. Then the man is like, whoa, but what about the other things? And then the guy is like, well, you know, can't we do that? And she says, well, if you kind of up your skills, if you kind of make a bigger contribution, maybe we can. But the amount of contribution that you're making now is simply not enough to make me happy. You know, a lot of women don't say that. They may say it to the girlfriend, but they don't say it to the guy. And I think they should.
So you think if it was spoken to the guy that they might step up their game and actually accommodate them more
Or
willingly
just mention,
and
you know,
capably.
Well, otherwise I'm just going to have to go see another guy about this. You know, date another guy, date a second guy. Most of the time when you say that to a guy, he will start performing much better. Or when you start dating, he knows that competition is waiting in the wings. So, you know, it will be like, whoa, okay, I'm there.
Right.
So, but, and I mean, then again, why should he if she's not really insisting on it? It's probably not that important to her. So it's also about women not being so too lenient, too kind of accepting things as they are, you know, but setting their expectations quite clearly. That's really a great tool to have.
Very interesting. And I'm glad that you kind of brought up the competition component, because you definitely put your cards out on the table with the guys that you dated. Like, how many of them felt that competitive desire with you to try to outshow, like, what the other person can and, like, kind of morph into more traditional roles with you?
Well, most of them wanted me for themselves, so they felt that this was sort of a qualifying game. You know, that they had to kind of say, okay, now I'm proved I'm better than the other guys, so you will choose just me. And then I was like, well, you know, you really got to perform if I'm going to choose just you. Some of the guys also said, well, you know, this is just not for me, because I keep feeling jealous when you're with one of the other guys, and I'm really not comfortable with it. And, you know, some of them were able to actually describe it precisely, and others were not really, but then I made the conclusion for them, thinking, well, you know, it seems like you're quite jealous. And then a couple of guys said, yeah, you're right, you're not, I think you should just have me. So you know, in a sense, it was also a catalyst for bringing out the character in the guy, and I really liked that part, because I had been struggling in my former dating life with getting out, you know, trying to find out what kind of a guy is this. You know, does he have the stamina that I'm looking for? Does he have the character? Or is this really my kind of guy? So by, you know, forcing them to actually show who they were, that made me more aware of who they were, and for me to be able to choose.
Right. Now, like that was one of the other things that I noticed too, because of course you're writing the book, you're notating things, you're telling us how you feel. Your emotions definitely were involved in these things. So it's like, and I did know that there was a lot of times where you did say, you know, you almost had an idea where they were gonna go all the time, but there was a little hint of like that overarching, like, romantic kind of traditional thing in the back of your head. Is that accurate, or did I read it wrong?
No, that's perfectly right, the way you read it, because I feel that definitely that was at the back of my head, and I feel it's at the back of the head of most people, because we're brought up with that model. You know, our ideal, we have one ideal regarding love, and that is to meet your high school sweetheart, to set up a family, get a house and apartment, and stay faithful emotionally and sexually with each other the rest of your life. And, and, you know, to have just one ideal like that is simply not healthy for people, because it may have worked 100 years ago, but it doesn't work today. You know, there's so many options, so many possibilities. We travel, we go online, we see many different things. So, I mean, maybe it's good for a while, but it may not be for your entire life. Or it may be that you need more than one partner. You know, I think we should be more open to having different models, because in that sense we can accept ourselves and other people if they want to live in a different way than our parents or great or grandparents lived.
Yeah, no, it's a definitely different way of thinking for sure, and I definitely wanted to find, you know, like touch base with you on that, because like I said, your book definitely acknowledged a lot of the obvious with the interactions with, you know, in your head as you were writing, and the responses that you received from men too. Did any time did this model have you need to juggle like multiple men at multiple times vying for the same spot? Right, which, you know, usually was a sexual one, of course. But, like, how did you do that, too? Like, how did you juggle to put them in their place, not get wrapped up into too much so that you can kind of figure out where you are?
Well, you know, actually, you know what I did? I copied what men do, because a lot of men are quite good at defining what they want. So I stayed all the time in my own ballpark. I said, okay, what would I like here? And then I looked at the guy and I told him what I would like. And then most of the guys, that was really interesting, most of the guys really liked that I told them what I wanted. They say it's so good to meet a woman who knows what she wants. Because they had met a lot of women who were like saying, oh, well, what do you want? And it's really difficult to make a woman who doesn't know what she wants or doesn't define it, to make her happy. And most of the guys wanted to make me happy. And that was incredible to feel that. I got to feel so positive about it and to feel, you know, hey, there's hope out there, because the guys really wanted the woman to feel happy. Of course, they also wanted the only one to feel her, make her feel happy. But, you know, then I had to tell them what made me feel happy. And and that was so in that sense, it was that was also why it was a catalyst, because I was succeeding in training myself to stick to what was important. And communicated in a nice and, you know, constructive manner. And when we look at our lives today, you know, we're not taught to do that anywhere. We're just taught that, okay, love is something that just happens between people. Well, sure, it happens, but it doesn't really continue to happen necessarily. So, I mean, I think we need to train in a number of areas. And when people do that, they become much more happy about their love life. Because they also, you know, another thing that I found was that a lot of women have a long list of expectations. And that means that when the man has fulfilled three or four of them, she will have many more sitting there for him. And that's not good for the men, you know, because then they will never feel that they make her happy. So, you know, define two or three most important areas, and then communicate it clearly. And then once he has delivered on just one of these areas, say thank you. You know, appreciate the efforts that he makes. And then, you know, once that two or three areas are fulfilled, then you can maybe bring in some more. But, you know, don't continuously have a long list of expectations, because it just makes both of you feel constantly a bit unhappy.
I also like... I'm going to make another assumption just out of reading, and I hope you can clarify this too. While reading, I found at times you were very busy, but you were also very lonely. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's right.
So,
and you know, I've found that if you want to change the way your life is operating right now, It doesn't happen from one day to the next. You must be able to accept a certain amount of loneliness, idleness, a vacuum in your life. And anybody who's able to actually accept that vacuum is able to change. But if you if you can't cope with it, then you will just drift back into the old habits and find a guy or a girl who kind of, you know, is similar to the one you just left, and the patterns will continue, and, you know, the whole thing will just be a matter of habits. But if you want to break your habit, you need to accept that there is a period in your life where things are not happening, you know? You know, you feel lonely, and you feel strange, and you feel, by, you know, different from other people. But then, I assure you, things will happen. Things will change.
So what is your, like, current relationship status?
Well, what happened with me that was, after a year and a half, I fell in love with a handyman, and he also fell in love with me. And then we were together for a couple of years. Then he moved to another part of the country and wanted me to move with him, and I couldn't really, you know, because of my daughter and my job and so on. And then I went back to my model, and then I dated three men again, you know, and trying to find out, okay, is it still the talker and the handyman and the lover that's important to me? And, you know, trying to kind of gauge myself. And then after a year of that, I said, okay, now I need to evaluate my experiences. What have I learned? And I found that the talking part was still important to me. And I also wanted to have a lover, you know, a guy for whom sex is important. And a number of people have asked me, doesn't every guy find sex important? I said, yeah, maybe, but not in the manner, you know, that I like sex. I like it to be where he's attentive, that he's not only focusing on, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, but where it's like a curiosity that we unfold together and so on. So that's what I specified. And then I figured, okay, well, the handyman, that doesn't really need to be part of it. I can, part of the equation, you know, I can just kind of, we can hire somebody to help us with practical stuff. And then I went and started dating, looking for one man, because I wanted to have a deep emotional relationship with a guy. And then I was only looking for a guy to talk with and a lover and who wanted, you know, for whom sex was important, but then also one for whom my writing was not a problem. Because I had experienced that with a number of the guys I'd been dating, that they were constantly wanting me to, hey, when are you going to finish that writing so we can be together? And I said, well, you know, I'll finish it next week. No, can't you finish it tomorrow? I want to see you tonight. Or, you know.
Hello? Holly?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, now I got you.
Yeah,
you went in and out for like a quick second.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what happened. But
we are very, very far apart.
Yes, I know.
Something could happen.
Yeah,
but
so
I'm glad
I don't
that
know
you
why
brought
I got
that
cut
up.
Off.
Oh, yeah, no, you were just basically talking about the evolution of how, where you are now. And I'm, you know, I actually probably cut you off good, because I was, like, dying to get this question in. It's like, I think that's important for people to realize, like, that you, this does evolve, and not to kind of really get trapped into this particular, you know, this three man. This is just a part of what you found, and you reevaluate as you go along, which is important,
yes,
too.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Now, you,
because,
just hearing
I mean,
that.
I think based on some of your comments, that you also know people who've had a couple of bad love experiences, and they just don't go into that love area again. Because, no, you know, I've been there, it didn't work. And I think that's such a shame, because, you know, there's so much love out there. There's so many possibilities. And people shouldn't just make one or two bad love experiences dominate the next steps that they're taking. You know, kind of look at it and say, okay, well, I got a bit wiser, and now I'm going out there again. Because, you know, love is fantastic when it's in your life.
Right, right. It is amazing because like there's a lot of things that you say, and I'm listening to how you're explaining it as opposed to reading the book too. It's like one of the things that popped into my head was like you must break up with people like all the time, and I know that you know we have a phrase in America. I'm sure it's a worldwide phrase, but breaking up is hard to do. Like how do you let go of so many people without you know like
well,
is that difficult?
Well, you know, in the beginning when you're dating somebody, you're not that deeply involved. So there it is not so difficult to kind of break up. And what I say is I try to go on a date 3 times with a guy where I find there's a potential. And then if after 3 days or three times I'm a bit in doubt, then I stop seeing the guy. You know, I listen to my doubt because I think far too many women are not listening to their doubt. They're listening to their hope. They're saying, oh, well, you know, maybe things are going to change or maybe everything is going to be fine. And, you know, maybe he's going to evolve and blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, if he hasn't over 3 dates shown you his real character, well, either it's because you don't listen to it or it's because, you know, he's not a guy that to collect. And then, you know, stop seeing him because there are many more fish in the ocean.
Absolutely.
And that's also what I found once I started dating, you know, because when I started dating looking for one guy, I went on dates. And then I was like looking at this guy and I said, okay, well, you know, you're nice, but do I really feel like I have to kiss you? Otherwise, my life would go under. And then if I said, nah, maybe not really, then I would just stop, you know, not see him a second time. Or if it was, you know, if I, the 10th guy I dated, I just felt, okay, wow, this is something for me. And luckily, he also felt that I was something for him. And then, you know, 4 months later, we moved in together, and a year later, we married, and that's 3 years ago.
Oh, wow. I know this is probably a stupid question. I'm just trying to get the practicality of, like, your execution. you know, reading this stuff. Like, you seem to go on a lot of dates. Like, was there much phone conversation? I saw there was some references to text and stuff like that. Because, again, it could be overwhelming with the amount of applicants, quote-unquote, that you had. Like, how did you kind of do that? It was mostly
how
having to see this person in person.
Them? Yeah.
Yes. Exactly.
Well, you know, I actually asked them a couple of questions, and then I let them qualify themselves. Because, you know, if a guy would say to me, oh, wow, you think 3 men are going to want to date you? You know, then he was just out of my possible league. Because it was like, yes, I think so. And if you can even make a joke about it, then I don't think we need to meet. So, you know, I was like, there wasn't like you could make 3 stupid jokes and I would still have confidence in that we would have a great date. You know, one stupid joke, out of my league, because there were so many candidates. So, of course, it was a bit more rough than I would probably have done before, because there were maybe not as many candidates, but now there were. So I said to them, well, you know, if you want to date me, you need to kind of show me who you are and what you want and give me an honest impression. And most men really like that. But of course, some of them weren't used to it. I also had a couple of men who were like saying, thank you so much for having showed me that I actually never listened to myself. You know, I actually was always out there trying to make the woman feel happy without asking what would I like to see happening. And I said, okay, well, great. Take it and use it, you know, because it's not gender specific. Listening to yourself and sticking to your priorities. That's much more family-specific or upbringing-specific. So both men and women can benefit from this model because it will force you to define what is important. You know, the 3 roles I define, they can be 3 different roles. Some people say, I want somebody that I can have do sports with, or somebody that I can share a spiritual life with, or that I can go hiking with, or whatever, you know. It's really individual, the three roles. Some people also define three roles and none of them are sex. You know, that's it depends all where you're at in your life. But then the first step is to define for yourself what is important. The second step is to signal it. And the third step is to keep to your priorities. Because that's actually, many people find that more difficult than we should think.
So with all the research like that you've done, what do you think is like the problem, say, with men in general, like overall?
Well, I don't think there is a problem with men. I think there's a problem with the dynamic between men and women. Because I think that there are too many unspoken expectations. And there are too many, you know, things that women do that allow men to continue to be lazy. And then the women get unsatisfied, and then they talk with their friends about it, but they don't necessarily kind of confront the guy with it, so that he thinks everything is fine, and all of a sudden she wants a divorce. And, you know, I think that's really too bad. And I think it's because we're not trained in love in anywhere in society. I think we should have much more about emotions in schools, you know, not just love emotions, but also emotions between people, because emotions guide so many of our actions. But when we're not very wise about them, we kind of think, oh, I just felt like that. No. Emotions follow tracks and follow patterns, so we can become more wise about it. And I think that is what is wrong in a lot of relationships, is communication.
Got it. Now, would you recommend this method to your daughter?
Well, it's fun you should ask, because I have a daughter, and when I was dating like this, she was 12 years old. And luckily for me, you know, she was with her dad every second week. So that was when I met these different men, because I didn't want her to be involved. And that was fine. But then, of course, when I decided to write a book about it, of course, she would know. So I was thinking about this. Okay, how should I deal with this regarding her? And then I ended up saying to her, you know, and now I'm going to publish this book, and it's going to come out, and I'm going to be in the media and, you know, television, radio and whatnot. But I don't want you to listen to any of it, and I don't want you to read any of the articles. And if anybody asks you about the book, just say, ah, you know, it's my mom. She has many different projects, and she's a bit crazy, and this is just the latest one. And, you know, I wanted her to not have to get involved. And she has, now she's 19, and she has said to me that that was a very good way of doing it, because she didn't feel that it was her issue.
So now, like, obviously, you know, she's of that age where there's a potential that she's going to be dating and, you know, like learning a little bit about her way. Like, again, would you recommend this method to her?
Well, and you know, I don't think she needs my recommendation. She has Tinder. You know, and on Tinder, you can kind of match up with anybody you want and do whatever. And you know, the interesting thing is that we have Tinder, but a lot of people are not talking about the fact that people actually go out and have, you know, sex with whoever. We just don't talk about it. It's like, ah, yeah, you know, we have Tinder, so people can go on a date. Sure, or they can go out and have sex with each other. You know, it's there's still a taboo, there's still a whole area that is not dealt with. It is just more something that is there. So in that sense, yeah, I'm a mom who talks with my daughter about sex, and I've let her ask the questions. It's not me who insists that we need to talk about it. But, you know, I say to her, if there's anything you want to ask, you know, just ask me. And her friends come and ask me, because they're like saying, oh, your mom, you know, we can talk with your mom. And I said, of course you can. You know, I mean, sex is something that's part of grown-up people's lives. So that's, let's talk about it, you know, in a nice and respectful and fun manner, because there is not one way of doing it. There's not one message, you know. There is follow your curiosity and be sure to say no when you don't feel like it. Or if you have a bad experiences, ask somebody to help you deal with it and move on. You know, don't let a bad experience dominate the next 10 years of your sex life, because that's too bad. I mean, it's not worth it.
No, yeah, absolutely, totally agree. I think that, you know, I like it for sure at that, you know, the way that you just phrased it, because it gives their opportunity, and, you know, to just open up with you, or like to just kind of just figure it out on their own without having like that taboo and restriction on all of the stuff that, you know, the society puts on you. I know society is definitely a big thing, and I actually asked you the question about the men just because I was trying to figure out the ego part of the whole thing. I kind of thought the answer was that men's egos wouldn't deal with the situation, to be honest.
Well, you know, I think women should maybe respect men's ego a bit less, because he may have a big ego, but is that what is bringing him what he really longs for? No, most of the time it's not. It's bringing him enemies. It's bringing him a wife who's not happy. You know, so the more men can also become aware of the prices of their ego, the better. And women can play a role in that. I'm not saying that they should, but I'm just saying that they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, makes sense. And now, like, how do you coach people in this now? I was just curious, like, your approach and how you when you sit down and have your coaching business when it comes to modern love and dating, like, how do you go ahead and coach, and, like, what's your approach when you first meet someone who comes into for your assistance? How do you go about assessing them and, like, kind of maybe formulate a quote-unquote plan for them to have success in this area?
Well, the first thing I ask is, what do you really long for in your dating life or in your love life? What are your deepest longings? And the interesting thing is that men and women, few of them are actually able to answer that question. And they look at me and they say, well, I don't know. I long for a nice love life. I say, but what is nice? No, I long for a passionate love life. Okay, what is a passionate love life? You know, be more specific. And then the first time after they've been to see me, they go home with a task of defining as concretely as they can their innermost, deepest longings in terms of love. And that is, sometimes it takes people, you know, 1 week, other times it will take them a month, and we meet 4 times and talk about it. Because the fact that you don't ask yourself, what am I actually longing for, also means that it's difficult for you to go out and find it. Because when you have this sort of, I long for a great love life, okay, and I long for a nice partner. Okay, what is a nice partner? I mean, many people can be nice, but they may not be a good partner for you. No, that's true. So the more conscious you can become of what you're actually looking for, the more you can also go out and start looking for it. So the first part of it is really about defining what makes your clock tick in terms of love and passion and so on. And then once we have that kind of defined, then we will make a plan on how to go about finding it.
Now, do you do anything as far as, like, really trying to break down, like, the societal norms and kind of try to get through to them, like, that, okay, some of your hesitation with this process and, like, this method probably has a lot to do with the expectations that society puts on you?
Well, I find that their family's expectations are more important in this. First, it's family expectations that we will talk about. Because whether we want it or not, the way our parents' relationship was influences our own image of a love relationship. You know, we may not be aware of it, and then again, the more we can become aware of it, the better. Because then you can pick the areas that you want to continue to bring along and the areas that you want to kind of leave. Because you say, hey, this was something my parents did and I hated it. Okay, well, let's, you know, make a farewell ceremony with it and let it go, because you don't need to bring it along. Whereas other things that you're like saying, oh, this is something that they did and I really like that. Great, bring that along. You know, So in that sense, first we deal with your family or your upbringing, whatever patterns were part of that. And then we will deal with your friends' expectations. And then we may get onto society. But most of the time we will have dealt with the important parts with the family and friends aspect. So the societal norms, I mostly deal with those in terms of blog posts or, pieces in newspapers or whatever.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now, what do you think, you know, has kind of completely changed since you've initially came up with this particular method? It's like, you know, you've done it for a little while now, you've seen its results, you've seen its impact. What would be the one thing that you say evolved most as to your observation?
Well, I would more say that I think not much evolves. You know, communication is still a major issue. And
mm-hmm.
first of all, kind of finding out with yourself what is most important for me, what am I not willing to compromise on, because then I will kind of wither and die inside. You know, that whole, training session is really, really important. And it has just become more important for me in terms of my clients over the past 10 years. Because we think that, oh, yeah, sure, I'm aware of this and I'm aware of that. But people can't answer when I ask them in concrete terms. And
mm-hmm.
and that means, you know, if you constantly have this long, undefined list of expectations, then you will most likely also have this sensation that, my life is okay, or it's all right, or, you know, it could be better, but I don't really know what to do about it, or I want to have a relationship, but I don't know what kind. And, you know, people
mm-hmm.
have a sort of hesitance in defining what they really want. And I know why, because insight and insight about something that kind of makes you feel that you need to do something about it. So
mm-hmm.
it's more demanding to get an insight about what you actually want. Because once you want it, then you also know that you can do something to get it. Whereas when it's not defined so concretely, then you can kind of sit back and say, oh, well, you know, I haven't really met real love yet. Oh, okay, what have you done? Oh, well, you know, I'm just sitting here waiting for it. Ah, okay, well, keep waiting, honey. It's not going to come. So for me, it's very much about, you know, choosing the two, three most important elements in love and then sticking to it, and then that will make you feel so much more happy than having a long list of undefined expectations that will never make you feel happy.
It makes a lot of sense. I like it a lot. I think I'm going to kind of wrap up the show with one or two more questions, but I definitely wanted to ask what your take is. Where does this go now? Like, where do you see, like, this kind of modern love in the next 5 to 10 years? Or even go further if you check that
well,
out.
Well, I think that, yeah, I think people are going to be become more and more tolerant of different ways of living together. So
mm-hmm.
that it's not, the whole life that has to be like this. Things can change, and it's okay. You know, now I have a single period, and now I'm in a relationship with somebody, or now I'm seeing more than one person, and you know, that's fine. It will also be a more demanding presence in the sense that we need to talk more about things. We need to make sure that we can sense where am I at, where's my partner at, and, you know, it's not necessarily going to be a lot easier, but it's going to be more genuine, more true to yourself. And I can definitely sense that that's where we're going, because people don't want to just settle for too little.
No, definitely. Absolutely, absolutely. And again, as I mentioned in the beginning, this is a health and wellness show. This is definitely something that has evolved to the point where it's like these particular shows with dating and relationships are really, really so popular because we do have a real problem with it. Obviously, you even stated in some
mm-hmm.
of your things, you know, we have a 40% divorce rate. You know, things aren't working, so it's good to have, like, innovative change. But
yeah.
What I did want to say is, like, you know, obviously – you do take care of yourself. I always try to find out, you know, for my experts, my authors, people are doing great things in life. What do you do? What's your regimen? Like, are you big on exercise, dieting? Just give us a little bit about how you are able to be so active and so engaging with these kinds of projects that you do. If you can fill us in a little bit.
Well, you know, I know that we have this one life, and we can actually do quite a lot ourselves to make it work out the best possibly. And I want to do that. You know, I'm not prepared just to accept, okay, this is just what is happening. You know, I say, we can always do better. We can always change things. We're never kind of painted ourselves into a corner. Or if we have, well, step on that painted floor and make footsteps. It's okay, you know. Let's not just accept things. I'm an action girl, you know, action woman. I wanna do something if things don't feel right. So that's what I urge people to do. You know, get out there and do something. Don't be so afraid of making mistakes. You make a mistake and then you get wiser and then you can, do something better next time.
Absolutely. Now, how about like, you know, your diet, your exercise? Do you do stuff of that nature, keeping in shape and maybe have like a little bit of a spiritual practice as well or no?
Well, I try to have a balanced life in the sense that I try, you know, every now and then I will eat a lot and, you know, we have drinks and so on. And then I'll have, a couple of weeks where I'm more in harmony and don't go overboard. But then I may go kind of overboard again. In the sense that I spend a whole weekend with friends or I, you know, go partying or, you know, I think it is good to seek a balance. And for me, it consists of doing something and doing it all the way, being in the presence and being with the people that I'm with and, you know, being with my husband when we've just been in a week in Bulgaria together and because he had a friend there who had a birthday. And it was we had a great week because I was just there with him. I didn't do a whole lot of other things. I wasn't working or writing or whatever. You know, I was there with him. So for me, it's very much being in the present. And if I don't like the present I'm in, well, then I'll leave and say, okay, I need to move on.
Got it. Very, very nice way of living. I couldn't have I said it better myself. You know, like you're definitely an example of how I think people should kind of emulate. This is a very, very interesting thought process, and like and a good thing, and I appreciate because like you're a woman of action, and you said there's an issue, I'm gonna find out how to fix this, and you took action. So it's a beautiful thing. But please, I just want to give you the floor just for, you know, for the final thoughts and stuff like that. Again, you're a wonderful guest, and I thank you for being on the show. But can you also just, you know, tell the people about, you know, where to get this book, maybe any of your social media handles, how they can get in contact with you if they want to, you know, find out a lot more about you outside of what we talked about today?
Yeah, sure. Well, thank you. Yeah, well, I have a website called modernloveandsex.com. That's modernloveandsex.com. And there you can, you know, follow my blog post and read more about me and so on. And you can order the book on Amazon or on any bookstore, Barnes & Noble, or any other bookstore near to where you're living. And I also do Skype sessions for love coaching. So, you know, if you are in a situation where you need some help, don't hesitate to contact me, because I'll be more than happy to help you. You know, I think that there's always something that can be done. And sometimes you will need a little inspiration and a little help in seeing what can be done and what should be done. But, you know, there's always something that can be done. You don't need to accept the situation that you're in.
Absolutely. Well, thank you again for being on the show. Definitely have a wonderful day.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Omar. It was great talking with you.
Likewise. Take care.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. great show with Pauline Middleton. Listen, she's going to revolutionize the way dating actually happens and just finding yourself. I mean, you could take that into the context of dating and a lot of different things in life. Finding out what you want and really just making sure that you stick to what makes you happy and be, like, uncompromising. So very, very good book. Real quick read. I flew through it. I'm usually ahead of the game and finish the books pretty quickly and far in advance of when I have the show, but I actually just finished it up this morning just because I just wanted to see who she ended up with. So I was like, it was a page-turner. So I hope you guys enjoyed the show. This is Omar Cumberbatch of the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I know it's been a while, but I'm back. I got shows scheduled for the foreseeable future, and I hope you continue to listen. Thanks again. Have a great day.